We will try and wind up with two programs today, looking into the peer review and the initial case of HSRC, for the number of potential. First of all, thank you very much for a nice cake at our today session. It's supposed to be a sweet session. With all the suitcases like this, I don't know anybody to disappoint me. You can't move to our bed. Right, without any waste of time, I'll allow us to bring the trust to one another, and then keep the program. That's for myself, from my test here, at Mabana Hotel, Shemar Isaac, Commissary Curry, Renee Hospital Moments, Colonel Advisor, Elia, Gane, Rebecca, that's my, the top of my office, and Orlando, the members of the Super Research.
Good morning, I'm Denise Douglas Jones, a member of the committee. Good morning, everybody. My name is Debbie Mutuli, member of the PC on Science and Technology.
Good morning, all. My name is Peter Smith.
Good morning, everybody. I'm
Adeline Linden. And we are from the DG
Association. Good morning, Chair and members of the committee, Phil Johat, DG Association.
Hello, members, Chair. My name is Julian, I'm also the CEO.
Good morning, my name is
Julian,
I'm Chief Director of the Innovation Planning and Research.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Nurulita Mulla. I'm the Chief of Staff in the Minister's Office. May I take this opportunity to convey the Minister's good wishes and just to tell you that you would have liked to be part of the session this morning because it was a review that was initiated by him as Minister. But he is in a Cabinet meeting and unfortunately he couldn't convey any apologies, so please accept his apologies.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Martin Levy, Special Advisor to the Minister.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Shaman Nato. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the DSD. Okay.
And all other planning participants as well around us.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. Happy birthday, Chair. I'm Aziza Fritik from CSIR and I'm the Parliamentary Liaison.
Hey, you're the only one who remembered that I was expecting. It's from 11. Wow. I said that this city should start with sour grapes. Grapes are already sour.
Good morning, Jay. Good morning, everybody. My name is Christopher and I'm from 7X.
Morning, Honourable Members. My name is Ismail Hussain from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Hi, and I'm Tamal Khan from Business Day Newspaper.
Okay. Right. Thank you very much for the introduction. I think I must allow the teacher to make his presentation.
Thank you. I'm not sure which one you want us to start with. The HSRC one?
Yeah, we want to start with here.
Okay, thank you. Sacred Church.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. What I forgot to mention at formal level, at committee level, is a word or a vote of congratulating to the department for the achievement in the presidential assessment of performance. Thank you very much for using our name. We intend creating a statement in the house of all that.
Thank you very much.
Let's give them a hand.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Maybe again, not to spoil the day, we acknowledge, I think, the announcement yesterday by the National Labor Center of the CLR on the work that they've done in the laser field, where they have announced the world's first digital laser that was developed at the NLC at the CLR. So here this has captured the imagination of the world around the stimulation.
We also intend making a statement about it.
Okay.
I just need to liaise with the whip of the committee because he deals with statements and motions. Yeah.
Thank you very much. So what we'd like to share with you in this review of the Technology Innovation Agency is the background to the process of reviewing the Technology Innovation Agency, give you the names of the people who are part of the panel, the purpose of the review, the scope of the review, the briefings and presentations that were made by the stakeholders that were asked to present or give briefings to the panel, including the interviews that were held with the stakeholders, and then we'll quickly focus to the recommendations, I think, that we have already done. So as you know, the Minister does have a legal responsibility for the governance and the resulting of a set of national public entities that reports to the Ministry, and the Technology Innovation Agency is one of such entities. It is a new organization, as the members would know, which has been in operation for the last 3 years. We generally conduct institutional reviews every 5 years. However, in this case, there was a feeling that there is a need to bring the time for the review much, much earlier. So the Ministerial Review Committee, which was appointed by the former Minister of Science and Technology, as you know, decided to initiate the first review of the Technology Innovation Agency be conducted to be a review of a developmental and formative nature and to consider both the fitness for purpose of the Technology Innovation Agency's operations as well as the fitness for purpose of the TIA within the National System of Innovation. So in November last year, the Minister then appointed the panel to conduct an external institutional review of the Technology Innovation Agency, and Dr. Khoza Mokhele was the chairperson. He is now the one of the special advisors to the Minister. Nasima Pasha, the CEO of the CAPA Education Consortium. Tom Malimula, who is the director of this organization called
Advanced. Nasima, sorry. Nasima, is she not the one who used to come?
She was in the ministry, yes.
She's not on our idea. We are.
No, she was to the previous year.
Kuleran Jobber, the ex-managing director of Avenged Water. Karl Kovadia, the managing director of the Banking Association of South Africa. So those are the panel members. So the purpose then of the review was to reflect on the establishment and operations of the agency in order to independently assess the strengths and weaknesses. And this will be based on the agency's current strategic plans and performance plans since its inception in 2008, as well as the challenges of integrating all of the BRICS into TIA in particular was key to the review. The original motivation for the establishment of the Technology Innovation Agency, as you all know, was to address the challenge of low levels of commercialization
of promising ideas that emerge from a number of institutions that are publicly funded in South Africa. The review panel was required to assess whether the organizational structures, policies, and programs were fit for this purpose that the organization was set for. So the support for taking ideas to early commercialization and successes and the challenges that have been faced in preparing initiatives for good commercialization. In other words, has TIA played a, or will it be able to play a thought leadership organization around these issues? And then it needed to look at risk funding applications from entities which require commercialization support as well as funding support from investors active in the late stage commercialization. So in other words, has TIA been successful in providing risk funding for ideas that would not be funded by anyone, and being able to take them to a point where there are other funding agencies or funding instruments that could take up that idea for commercialization. Scope wanted to establish whether the contribution that TIA had made in supporting universities and publicly funded research organizations in particular had been done in creating a culture that supports the commercialization of their intellectual property. Evaluate the manner in which decision-making processes within the organization are done, as well as the adequacy and effectiveness of the performance monitoring systems of the agency. Does it have monitoring systems that allows us to track how these innovations or these ideas are taken to good commercialization? And that would, of course, include benchmarking with other similar public institutions such as SECAS in Finland. Assess the progress that has been made with the consolidation of the various entities and programs that were transferred into TIA on its establishment, including a review of how TIA dealt with the various initiatives and projects that it inherited, what has happened to those projects, and taking into account the primary purpose for which TIA was established. If there were projects perhaps that had to be discontinued, what were the reasons? If others were being taken forward, what were the reasons and where are we on those? And then, of course, if the panel felt that they wanted to include any other areas that are relevant to the intentions of the review, I think they were given scope to do that. So now let's give you a sense of the briefings that were then presented to the panel. We made a presentation at the Department of Science and Technology trying to provide the reasons for the genesis of the Technology Innovation Agency and what at the time was driving setting up the Technology Innovation Agency. The board and the executive of TIA was also invited to make briefings and presentations. The National Intellectual Property Management Office, a number of science council funding entities and other statutory entities within the NSI were invited, other government departments, Department of Trade and Industry, Economic Development in particular, higher education representatives, technology transfer offices, managers and people working and then former heads of the Biotechnology Regional Innovation Center, former Innovation Fund leadership. And then there were a number of interviews that were conducted. I'm not sure why the interim CEO, Dr. Excellent, or interim at the time, okay, this would be Dr. Msomi, who was an interim CEO of TIA before the former CEO was appointed. The technology patients manager, successful applicants of the Technology Innovation Agency, the two. Their experience on working with the agency, the ones that were unsuccessful, private sector, including venture capital industry representatives.
I forgot to switch it off. So anybody else who wants to switch off it,
this
is fine.
Sorry for that.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah. So that gave the background of why the review and what the scope of the review was and the people who were invited. So now we go through the recommendations and we'll try by all means not to filter them. If you try and classify the recommendations, they relate to issues of the mandate of TIA or they relate to administrative issues or the related to professional relationship issues. So that's how the panel classified or clustered the recommendation. So recommendation one was that the incorporation of about 7 different entities and 2 programs, the AMTS and the technology station, was a huge undertaking. And therefore, the panel recommended that the length from the establishment of the technology agency must be written down to inform future establishment of entities by the department. The Minister of Science and Technology should request the DG of the DST to provide his full assessment of the role that the department played in establishing the Technology Innovation Agency. So what is it that we did in order to make sure that was a transition of the agencies and entities that migrated into TIA, including a critical reflection of the weaknesses that have compromised the ability of the Technology Innovation Agency to appropriately execute and discharge its mandate. So looking back, are there things that we could have done differently in order to make sure that there was a smooth migration of these entities? And then the Minister also requested to make a similar request to the chairperson of the Technology Innovation Agency Board to provide an assessment of the role that was played by the board in the CEO, those activities that were within the sphere of control. And I think that's the reason why the interim CEO was also interviewed, because I think he had a lot of lessons in the interface between the department and, of course, the board in the early days of the establishment of the team. So this is the first recommendation. The second recommendation was that the Department of Science and Technology was responsible for setting up and overseeing the trust. These trusts were governing the Biotechnology Regional Innovation Center, and they and the reported PFMA transgressions that had occurred while the trusts were under the watch of the DST. So, in other words, maybe let me continue and then explain it. Technology Innovation Agency has commissioned a legal services provider to advise it on a legal framework to enable the investments that were inherited from the BRICS and the Innovation Fund to be condoned by the Ministers of Science and Technology and Finance. This is based on the provisions of Section 51, 52 and 92 of the PFMA. Now, our understanding of this issue was that the Technology Innovation Agency inherited investments that were not aligned to the listing of the Technology Innovation Agency, which is listed as a public entity, 3A, which has restrictions in the manner in which a 3A public entity has to operate, whereas the trusts were not 3A public entities, and therefore they could, for instance, have ownership in some of the companies that were funded, and that was the framework within which the trusts were operating. So just to clarify this recommendation. So when the Technology Innovation Agency, in my view, was then audited by the KPMG, this was found to be a fund. So the recommendation goes further than to say it is envisaged that the framework would enable the ministers of both science and technology and finance to endorse the investments that have been audited by KPMG on behalf of AG and have been shared with Parliament. It is recommended by panel then at the time that the Minister of Science and Technology consider this framework under development and uses it as appropriate to approach its counterpart at National Treasury to contemplate this process of condoning the transgression. My understanding was that the framework would enable the Minister of Finance to allow these investments to be under special requirements or under special regulations to be kept within the technology agency under, I think, a framework of investment that would be agreed by the Minister of Science and Technology and therefore recommended for approval by the Minister of Finance. The third recommendation was the category of professional relationship between the Department of Science and Technology and the Technology Innovation Agency. The panel had found that there was a poor state of relationship between the Director General of the DST and his senior executives on the one hand, and CEO of the Technology Innovation Agency and the senior executives on the other hand. They were undermining the ability of both the department and the DST to appropriately discharge their respective mandates. And ministers, just as the Minister of Science and Technology and the Board of TIER should declare the prevailing environment as unacceptable and hold the Director General and the TIER CEO accountable to ensure that an environment conducive to corporate governance prevails between the Department and the Technology Innovation Agency. Recommendation 3 continued that we usually have formal bilateral meetings between the DST and our entities, and the recommendation was that these should take place regularly with a representation of both parties at an appropriate senior level, and that formal report backs should be given to both the Minister and the Chair Board to ensure that this working relationship is maintained and restored and monitored regularly. Recommendation 4. In view of the marginal position of the technology stations within the Technology Innovation Agency, this was the funding of the panel, but that the TIER Board should investigate ways to protect and enhance their core function of supporting small medium enterprises to access the specialized technology services and expertise in the universities of technology. So the investigation by the board should include consideration of relocating the technology stations. I think the example that was given is that maybe the CSIR would be the best organization to manage the technology stations. Recommendation 5 is that a regional strategy and plan should be developed for adoption by the TIER Board. If you'd remember, the biotechnology regional innovation centers were located in a number of provinces. There was one in Cape, one in KwaZulu-Natal, one in Gauteng, I think one in Eastern Cape. And the view was that the strategy, therefore, of having a footprint in region should clarify the role and scope of operation of regional offices and should be developed in consultation with key stakeholders. There should be a moratorium at the moment on regional expansion of the Technology Innovation Agency until the board has clarified the role and the function of the offices that are located in various regions of the country. Recommendation 6, administrative matter where the lodging of ring-fenced projects by the DST within the Technology Innovation Agency should not be encouraged. In cases where a project or a program is initiated in the DST, if we feel that it fits best within the mandate of the entity that is governed by the department, proper negotiation should take place between the DST and that entity to agree on transfer of such a project or program from the DST to that entity. Ideally, the ownership of a project or program should be transferred, as well as a reporting framework needs to be agreed to enable the DST to be satisfied that that program that has been transferred to the entity does meet the intended objectives, which is usually informed by the motivation that we sent to Treasury for that particular program. Recommendation 7, the review panel identified a number of key operational areas that they felt required some attention, including turnaround times for inquiries when applications are being submitted, how long do they commit themselves to when they will respond to the applicant. Drawdown of the project funding, if it's been agreed that the money will be paid these times or through these milestones, this must be clearly articulated. What are the overhead costs? And a stronger and better communication with the stakeholders about, I suppose, TIER and what they offer. Plans to address these challenges and ensure radical improvement should be put in place by the management of the Technology Innovation Agency. Such plans must include measurable targets, and the board, of course, will therefore have to exercise their oversight role in monitoring progress towards the achievement of these efficiency goals. Recommendation number 8 is that the Act is recognized as being an enabling Act with a very broad mandate. So the review panel recommends that a properly structured shareholders complex be entered into between the Minister of Science and Technology and the Board of the Technology Agency so that they will agree on which scope of the mandate of the technology, broad as it is, the organization perhaps ought to focus attention on. Once the shareholder contract is concluded, the TIER should have the authority then to govern the organization or the board without undue interference from the department. The Enabling Act will still allow the Technology Innovation Agency to identify activities that may actually be outside the agreed shareholder compact, but hopefully within the scope of the Act. If that does happen, explicit arrangement and agreement with the Minister would be solicited to ensure that that scope that is outside the shareholder's compact is still in line with what the Minister is expecting the organization to deliver. Recommendation 9 is a recommendation that suggests that TM must be given a mandate to be a hub where, amongst other activities, the following entities interface with the objective of converting ideas from or into commercial activities. It should interface with publicly funded R&D entities, higher education institutions, science council, and the national laboratory. Large and small commercial and industrial businesses, innovative private individuals who seek to convert their ideas or commercial activities, and a non-governmental organization and community-based organization. So if we continue with this recommendation, the fundamental role, therefore, of the Technology Innovation Agency would be that of a publicly funded instrument that ensures a national innovation ecosystem functions at a maximum efficiency and effectiveness. And for such an organization, the following features would be expected. The role of the entity or this entity would be to build bridges between various sources of innovative ideas and potential supporters of innovators. So in other words, if there are funding agencies on the right-hand side that are willing to fund ideas, the technology agency would be clearly engaging with those and asking them to be put in close proximity of those that are coming with innovative ideas. The entity would need to develop competencies, therefore, to seek out and find innovative ideas from all sources in the innovation system. So in other words, staff of the agency would be in publicly funded institutions, would be in private business, small and large commercial operations and public entities, private innovative individuals and communities. So an important role of such an entity, once the initial engagement has been established with the source of idea, would then be to facilitate a seamless articulation of innovative developments along the technological innovation chain. So even though the agency might be funding one part of the chain, but it to then make sure that when the idea is ready for the full commercialization, and maybe as an example, an agency like the IDC is ready to fund that idea, they would facilitate the funding from the IDC to come into the work that they would have taken to the stage where it needs to be fully commercialized. So in that instance, then the mandate of the TIA would cover the entire innovation chain universe, from early stage, where innovative ideas emanate from research and development activities, all the way down the innovation value chain to a commercial stage. So that's the bridge role that they would play. However, despite the fact that they would be playing across the innovation chain, their roles would be different. The TIA must be primarily a grant giver, providing grants for early stage up to the proof of concept for those that would like to do that, because there are no funding agencies at the moment that operate in that space. Beyond, therefore, the proof of concept, the agency would play the role of using its funding to facilitate similar connections between the proven concept that they would have funded and then make sure that sustainable funding vehicles are then solicited outside their own funding. In other words, what this means is that they have to be extremely careful where they fund, but they can play a facilitative role in assuring that that funding and that idea is taken to full commercialization with other partners. So this facilitating role would require TIA bringing potential downstream funders into the conversations as TIA makes its decision to make primary grants. So in other words, you might be identifying even at the early stage of funding that there are commercial spin-offs of this entity that would be funded by agency X further down, and then you engage them early on so that they would also say, we think this is an idea that if it gets to this stage, we'll be able to fund it to the next stage. So TL provides soft funding if it is a necessary step of securing funding to progress to a project. So even as a proof of concept, if the funders on the downstream say, if you take it to the next stage, you will fund it, they could provide soft funding for that, maybe with a small return on investment to be agreed by TIA and the parties. For TIA to do this, the required skill set would include a range of expertise, engineers, scientists, venture capital experience, manufacturing experience, finance and economy. And then it is suggested that the TIA will need these particular kinds of skill set in pursuing this sort of role that has been defined under this recommendation 9. The culture of the organization as well we have to change. Swift, agile, lean, effective and efficient organization which has an understanding of the role of the staff, not being the one confined to the office but is out there sourcing ideas, trying to look at how these ideas can be funded and how, when they are ready, they can be taken into the next stage. To operate transparently and engage in active consultation with relevant stakeholders, secure their involvement in the design of initiatives, and thereby ensure broad-based support for this initiative. And in doing that, of course, they will have to communicate this new role so that everyone understands their role and the partnership that it wishes for. Recommendation 10. The agency should be a granting agency that receives money from the fiscal for the purpose of facilitating an efficient and effective national innovation ecosystem. It should understand the return on investment as not being an accrual of assets in the balance sheet of the agency, but rather in the manner in which the benefits to the national economy and jobs are created from the commercialized innovation. So in other words, the culture of the organization should not be a culture that is driven by having huge returns on investment, but facilitating the transformation of these ideas so that they make impact into the economy. So in other words, the manner in which you set the objectives of the economy and how that are driven by the engagement with your partners needs to change. And then recommendation 11 is that people are of course at the heart of innovation. Therefore, innovation requires people with skills and attitudes to be entrepreneurial in their professional lives, whether by creating their own companies or innovating in existing organizations in both the public and private sector. So it's just an observation. Although South Africa has made progress toward encouraging a more favorable culture and environment for innovation-based entrepreneurship, feeling of the panel was that we still have to do more in this area. And the Technology Innovation Agency can promote an entrepreneurial culture, for example, by encouraging events that highlight entrepreneurial role models and supporting the integration by relevant education departments of this attribute of entrepreneurship into the education system. So really playing a role of deepening the culture of taking ideas into commercial and people being encouraged to be entrepreneurs and take risks instead of small medium enterprises or big companies. Recommendation number 12, which I think is the last recommendation, the review panel is well aware of the challenges of interdepartmental coordination in government. The review panel was informed that silos exist even inside government departments that make the interdepartmental coordination a challenge. So the panel then was suggesting that the Minister of Science and Technology uses this best endeavor to foster some high-level interdepartmental forum to coordinate innovation across the national system of innovation. Maybe for the members of the committee, you know that there are innovation support programs in our government departments, in particular the Department of Trade and Industry has been one example. The Economic Development Department and Ministry, they oversee the IDC, and I think when this recommendation was made, it was made with that understanding in mind that we have in government other activities that are trying to support innovation, and therefore how can the Minister provide like some clue or some form of bringing other players into the same discussion around innovation issues. the forum and that is proposed should be perhaps at the ministerial level where all innovation related activities and support are discussed, or at the DD level. At the very minimum, if it's not possible to set up such a forum to strengthen the coordination across the national system of innovation, the Act should be amended to allow the DD of DSD, DTI, CEO of CSR and president of other organizations and nominee of the IDC to be appointed as ex-official non-voting members of the board. So in other words, you can probably, if you don't have a quorum, invite these individuals to make sure that the coordination at the board level of the activity supporting innovation at least is achieved at the board level. In appointing a new board of the Technology Innovation Agency, the minister should include individuals who have a track record of involvement in innovation in the private sector. So we should also bring in people from large companies, SMEs and past levels, as well as individuals from universities and science campuses, because they would be aware of the challenges that the universities and science councils are having within the organization and making sure that the idea of publicly financed institutions also receiving funding from TIA is achieved. So as a way forward, we had to give our view as a department on these 12 recommendations, and I think we have accepted as a department the recommendations, and we are developing, and we have developed a joint action plan with the Technology Innovation Agency at the board level to address the recommendations. Some of the recommendations are already being implemented. I think that in the appointment of the board, for instance, we have requested somebody from the IDC to sit on the board. There was an attempt to have somebody from the Department of Trade and Industry also sitting on the board. And I think the structure and the profile of this board already takes into account the recommendation of bringing people from the science councils and universities. And the recommendations are forming part of our bilateral meeting that we were asked by the board and the minister to implement in harmonizing the relationship between the DST and the Technology Innovation Agency. I think, Chair, that's it. So I'll try not to add any of my views, but just give the report as pure as was presented by the minister.
thank you very much, DK. I think there is a lot that the review committee raised, and a lot that also you on your part have considered to and commissioned as an action response. We in the committee also have looked into it and considered this report, and there are a few things that I thought that before the committee should engage with you, they should familiarize with my office consideration of the whole matter. First of all, key issues for the committee to consider here is how can the work of TIA and related entities such as the CSR be synchronized and coordinated in order to realize and interpret the nature of the system of innovation. For example, where do technology stations really fit within TIA or within CSR? That's some of the things that you have raised yourself and the review of the committee. The second concern or consideration is how is TIA meant to transform itself as a hub for technological innovation as it is recommended? A hub should be a superhighway and a multi route for innovation in the country. I have here a good example of the Singapore model. Singapore model can describe how we should answer this question. How does the regionalization call for TIA speak to the idea of TIA being the hub? If we want to regionalize it, as has been one of the thinking, then the idea of being a hub, then after it comes in, because if it's a hub, it means that everything should be fixed at a convenient superhighway environment. And what measures will be put in place to close the innovation gap between public funded higher education institutions and science council and the commercial and industrial world? It is believed that the gap has widened instead of narrowing according to the report and recommendations. Do we need to narrow or do we need to diversify our innovation innovative portfolio and diminish knowledge boundaries and create platforms of open innovation? Is that what we want? Again here, we have a good example of a Swedish model which can answer some of these questions. And then, how is CRMN to be positioned within the innovation space as an enabler of R&D and exploitation thereof for the general benefit of all sectors in terms of creating industries and jobs, or in terms of balancing its books, in terms of profits, which could indeed lead to more investments in R&D? Which one do we want? Do we want it to focus on profit making, or do we want it to be what it was designed for in bettering the lives of all South Africa? How is CR going to rectify the return on investment model issue? How will the recommendation of the shareholder compact between CR and the Ministry of Science and Technology work, as I just mentioned, the type of this form of compact, how is it going to work? How do you perceive it working? These are some of the questions which the committee has looked into and considered, and which we can develop our sharing of ideas from, especially at this juncture. I'll allow the members to discuss with you their own opinion based on the word of judgment. I see Honorable Smith, Honorable Machumi, Honorable Dr. Roret, led on.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, DG, for the presentation. I think most of my comments are related to the recommendation still, but perhaps as a preliminary, just to say, which are a couple of things as a preliminary. First of all, what precisely prompted the review now? Because although you say, obviously, it's a normal five-institution review, it was felt that it was appropriate to do it now. Was there a general feeling that CR is failing, or was the general feeling that it's lost, or struggling, or what? There might be something prompted the review right now. I know the Minister of Review Committee suggested it, but again, that suggests it's arising out of some sort of issue. What point was that issue? Then maybe it might have been useful, although it's implied, but it might have been useful to actually put the findings down prior to the recommendation, because I want to see a direct link between what is found to be problematic and what the response is to the recommendation. The way it's presented now, you get recommendations which speak implicitly to findings, but finding are explicit. That might be useful. And then thirdly, it's not clear, although you do hint at one point right near the end, whether legislative amendments might be required to give effect to this more broadly. But having said that, let me just speak to some of the recommendations. The first one, I don't actually understand, recommendation two. I don't understand it because, as far as I'm aware, this is an issue which I thought we settled about two or three years ago. I mean, the whole issue of the Auditor General's findings of the manner in which the corporation is cut and so on. I mean, the whole problem area about and the solution of going to Treasury and getting condoned, all that I thought was about years ago. Why come up now, in 2013, as a recommendation that a legal service provider is advising on a legal framework to enable investment to be condemned, to be condemned. The condemnation process is finished, corrupt, and complete. The only recommendation, in fact, I can see recommendation two, because most of the description, the only recommendation is the minister considers the framework and uses it as appropriate. So I'm obviously completely out of the loop when it comes to the time frame there. Then, again, it speaks to that finding. I mean, this recommendation three, which starts off essentially by saying there's a poor set of relationship between yourself and your comrades and those of here. What it doesn't say is why. What was the nature of problem between yourselves? mean, you were very diplomatic at the end, and say you're presenting this dispassionately, and I imagine you have some certain views on what this means. But again, I think as a committee, I don't, you know, quote on quote, but I do like to know what was the nature of that relation and why. Recommendation 4, I don't really understand what it means. It says here, view of the marginal position of technology stations within the tier. The marginal position of the station, what do you mean? You mean the tier didn't prioritize them as visits, or that there weren't enough of them, or they weren't funded properly, or it's not clear to me why it was meant by marginal position. The regionalization is very hard to write. Seeing as I'm doing that for now. I don't understand also recommendation 6 properly. I presume it's speaking to a problem that exists, but it says the lodging of ring fence projects by DST within tier 2 current. Maybe just to explain what the problem comprises. It's not clear to me at all. When you speak in Recommendation 7 of plans to ensure radical improvement in certain areas, radical improvement, I presume the findings are that things are radically bad, so I do need radical improvement. Maybe a little bit of what the operational problems were that were so serious.
Yeah.
Radical improvement is required. Oh yes, the issue of Recommendation 8 of a stakeholder compact as opposed, or shareholder compact, as opposed to the enabling provisions of the Act and the notion that one has to, the share would then operate with a shareholder compact without interference with others, but anything outside of that, even if it's within the Act, needs explicit shareholder agreement. What is it speaking to? I think I understand it, but I don't understand why it's there as a recommendation. I'm assuming there was a problem. On Recommendation 9 also, you speak about the role of TIA, the fundamental role and then the role and so on. Now, the first statement, I think, far too bold, is to say that the fundamental role of the TIA will be that of a publicly funded instrument that ensures a national innovation ecosystem functioning, a national innovation to be effective as well, that's a possibility. The whole thing about a national system of innovation is you guys are going to drive it, actually, not one of the cogs of the wheel. So that's inappropriate. But the appropriate one is the second one, which is that it has to build bridges. That does make sense to me. Making the whole innovation canon. Then Recommendation 9 will continue. Sorry, it's on page 30 now because the recommendation spreads off page. This requires skill set that you speak of here, requires which makes sense. Engineers, scientists, venture capital, manufacturers, finance, etc. Is this meant to be, is the recommendation saying that here simply has to have access to those skill sets, or it has to have them itself? So one is in-house, one is consultant based. I imagine it's the second, but if it is in-house, I'd love to know how that would work. The issue on Recommendation 10 of which the chair referred to about publishing about return investment. To what extent is the current approach by here a function of its legislative mandate? In other words, approach to business? And then the whole notion of taking some shareholder equity and the whole concern of driving profit. Is that actually a function of the way the tier has been conceptualized in law in the first instance? Or is it a function of the second level of decision making? In other words, if you wanted to refocus from what it's doing to something else, do you have to change the law to do it that brief? Almost done. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jonathan. Let me start by commenting on this presentation. And please bear with me when my questions also keep on going up and down or up and down or turning because of what I've been beginning to do. Can you tell them to them questions also to an extent that my mind has to do the same now? My first question is on slide 3, has been covered by my colleague, Honorable Smith, regarding the institutional reviews that have been covered. The other one is on slide number 22, which is recommendation number 5, on the moratorium on the regional expansion of TIA until board adopts the strategy. My question is, when is the board expected to have adopted the said strategy? And on slide number 25, which is recommendation number 8, where there is an expectation of a shareholder context to be established between the Minister of Science and Technology and the Board of TIA. What I would like to find out is when again is this expected to take place, the established this context, the shareholder context. And the last one is on slide number 36, which talks about the bilateral meetings between the Department of Science and Technology and TIA. What I would like to find out is the regularity of these meetings, how often are meetings going to take place. Next, thank you, Jay. On page slide, recently made the review panel, Dr. Palma Lemola, Finland, and on page 10 again, reference is made to TKS. Why this specific role by Finland? Is there a specific reason? What is the role of Finland in this story or TIA? Page 6, the third line sees the strengths and weaknesses. What were the strengths and were there any strengths? Do they refer, for instance, to a huge return on investment, or were there any, and which were they? Were they? Then on page 11, the second bullet, the review panel may include any other areas that are relevant to the intention of this review. Were there any other areas that they focused on? Did they do so? Then on page 14, again, the reference to technology stations. Could you please elaborate, give us some more information on these stations? Because on page 21, and my colleague already referred to these stations, specifically the investigation should include consideration with relocating the technology stations. We need some more information on that, and specifically more than also on recommendation 4. And then page 19, here's the first state of the relationship. I think the Honourable Smith did refer to more or less the same, but what was this relationship and why was it so negative? What lies behind, or specifically this recommendation, we would like to know. Then on page 30, the required skill set for TIA mandated aspirants above would, at the minimum, as you mentioned, engineers and scientists. Don't they currently have these skills that are listed here in this recommendation because they focus on grants and facilitation? And could you please elaborate also on the facilitation role and what skills do they currently then have? And then the final question is on slide 33. Now, the reference is made of entrepreneurship into the education system. Now, I'm aware of the fact that during the late 80s, there was a strong focus on entrepreneurship in high schools. The focus, I think it became part of business economics and transport. But now, what is the current interaction with the education department? I believe it's basic education. And you refer to certain events that should take place. But what about curriculum? How does the curriculum provide for entrepreneurship? And are you also going to focus on that? Because events come and go. But the curriculum is a fixed thing, and it can develop into something better over the period of time. It is a continuous thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe let me start off with some of the comments that you made, and then we'll come to the specific recommendations, and then I'll ask Christina as well to help. The idea of these technology stations and where they should reside, I think a couple of members, honourable members, have raised it. But maybe let me start off by picking on the point made by Honourable Smith. I accept that maybe I haven't lately looked at the report that was made public, whether it does have what are the findings and therefore the recommendations. I think I can look at that for you and see whether that can be made available. But you're right, each of these recommendations, they were fixing a finding that I think was identified by the panel. So let's start off with the stations, I think, because it's been suggested by both the chair and yourself. The feeling is that the main sort of activity for the agency is to try and transform ideas or to try and stimulate innovation in whatever way you interpret it. And the technology stations are, in a sense, not really about, say, about driving ideas from wherever into full commercialization. They are seen as a service that is provided to small and medium enterprises from the universities of technology on how they can improve their productivity or their effectiveness of using technology or innovation. And therefore, the feeling, and I assume this was the testimony of most of the technology station managers, is that in their engagement with the peer executives, and I suppose in the manner in which I think they were interacting with them, they were not happy with the manner in which they were the hawker of the activities within the station. So I think that's probably the finding, but I think the main reason to explain why they are not, like the main focus of what TIA is all about is what I've explained, and therefore the recommendation that says maybe let's review whether they are really part of the core activities of the agency or whether we should find a different home for them. Now, the manner in which the recommendation has been accepted and there's a way of taking it forward was that this responsibility is given to the TIA board on the one hand, but it's also been given to the Department of Science and Technology and Program 5 that has been overseeing this station is already developing a proposal on how best this station, if they still remain within the agency, can still be within the agency, or perhaps we could find another home for them where this focus of being a service provider to small medium enterprises where they get ideas on how the solutions can be solved using technology can be enhanced. So that's the first response. The second one, Chair, you said how can TIA transform itself? Well, our view is that it would be an effort of the ministry and the department on the one hand. It will be the board and the executive on the other hand, broadly perhaps agreeing on these recommendations if they agree with them. And then to put in place, both at the board level, governance and strategy that informs the operations of TIA. I don't think it will be easy for the organization to do that on its own. Why? In some of these recommendations, there are things that can be done by TIA, the board, there are things that should be done by the ministry in which much not in transforming the air. So you're absolutely right. It's not going to be possible for the organization to transform itself. It will have to be a process that, as I say, involves the board and the minister. And at this point in time, just to share with you the process, the minister, after these recommendations were made, invited the board. It's certain that the board at that time was a new board. And it was useful in the sense that they didn't have any preconceived ideas. They have then gone through each of the recommendations, and they are now in the process of writing formally to the minister to indicate which one they are accepting and how they're going to take it forward. And I think the minister on his side has written to the chair of the board informing them of which aspects of the recommendations he agrees with specifically and the flavor of the recommendations. So that's been done, so we are now both, as I say, on behalf of our minister on our side, doing a proposal on each of these actions, how we're going to then implement this, and I think the board has also been asked to do that and invite to the minister.
But have anyone out of the bodies that you are listing as relevant in doing this, has any one of these bodies probably amass itself with some form of experience at international level to look at how other hubs and technopolis are operating? That's my question.
We have I visited a TSR organization, you quoted the Singapore model, and we have invited and suggested to board that they visit some of these institutions. We found that, for instance, the model that we saw in Malaysia, being a model that is akin to what we thought here would be all about. So I think for me it's whether there's the right mindset of what is it that you'd like to implement rather than whether you can bring people within the management of the organization. I do know that there is somebody who's seconded from Oseo, I think, in France, also trying to bring the international experience. And I would like to link that question to the question that was earlier asked by Honorable Lopez Lawrence around why Finland and Texas and the role of Mr. Lamola. It's always been a model of a country which has put in place institutional arrangements that, in our view, has been able to achieve two things. One, working closely with publicly financed institutions and taking ideas from research into commercialization, but also having worked very, very closely with the industry in bringing the demand side of innovation. So I think the idea of bringing someone from Finland is because of the previous, I think, attempt by Finland. In fact, I think in the ranking in Finland, it's under innovation, it's always been number one in the last 15 to 20 years. So it's just the case of the benchmark of how best you can do this. We try to get others, but the minister didn't want to pick funnel. We do know that people in Silicon Valley and in some countries in the East as well, but we just got one international panel member was sufficient. And then the regionalization and the hub. My view, Chair, is that you can still have a hub with folks. So in other words, you can have a hub located somewhere with the functions that are being proposed here, but you can still have folks in certain regions. But I think what the panel is asking the board to do and ourselves is to clarify what is going to be the hub, and therefore if you think of a central office being a hub in Pretoria, define the relationship of the hub with the spokes that you'll be having, whether they, because at the moment, and this is Honorable Smith's question, and I'm going to try and answer it in two parts. The one is that we as a department have been worried, we have been worried about the rapid, if you like, increase of the organization into the regional fund because of the huge operational costs that brought to the organization. And therefore, we would like this to be done in a phased way and in a manner that recognizes that there are costs, but also to ensure that if you do have, you know, these hubs or these regional offices, their role is aligned to the mandate of the organization. This is my own personal view because I'm trying my level best not to put my passion in this. It would be odd if the organization is a predominantly funding idea from publicly funded, predominantly, to be, with due respect to a province that would not have public funds, to have an office of the organization fully fledged in a province where you probably don't have the university or an office of technology transfer. We can quote a province like maybe Mpumalanga, there's no publicly financed research organization in Mpumalanga. So for an organization to have a fully fledged office in Mpumalanga would not make sense unless there is a reason which is agreed by the board and articulated. So I think that's the finding, and this is where it came from. However, if there is another reason beyond what we thought the focus of the organization is, it would have to be properly communicated.
You see, why there was a concern around this question of hubs versus regional entities. Because remember that the formation of TI itself was the amalgamation of these regional bodies. So once you have taken all the regional bodies and amalgamated them into a hub, it's a little bit inconceivable. How are you going to again start going back to these regions which you thought that they were not very helpful? You understand what I'm talking about? So it's possible in a certain setup, like when you think about the innovation systems themselves, that you can have regional innovation system to process national innovation system. But it's difficult to imagine when you amalgamate these entities, the bricks, into a single entity that is supposed to form some superhighway of other entities that work in coordination and in collaboration. That will again dismantle them into making them regionally, you know, it's difficult to imagine without quoting a reference experience from elsewhere that it has been done and successful. Otherwise, you are beating up and down and doing nothing.
No, I agree with you, Jeff, but that's why I think the recommendation is saying the board needs to come up with a proposal as to how do you strike a balance. My interpretation of a recommendation is a balance between what the hub does and what the regions do, and if you choose a particular region, what informs you that this region is doing this? Is it because, as you rightfully point out, because there is a regional innovation strategy that province has adopted? Is it because you have a number of publicly financed institutions in the region, or you have innovative ideas that come from that region? The panel felt that this is not clearly articulated, and therefore what has happened is that because the biotechnology regional innovation centers have footprints in the region, you've just, if you like, incorporated that model without justifying the continued existence of those models. So I think they're just asking that this be properly articulated in the board, so that as you expand your footprint, there is a reason for why you've chosen this to be a regional office. I mean, as I say, from our side, one of the things that we'll probably even request is that those regional offices probably could be, for cost purposes, could be co-located perhaps with offices of technology transfer. So this is a package of concerns, I think, that were raised around the regional footprint. You then, Chair, asked something around how to close the innovation gap. I agree with you, this is not an issue that can only be resolved by here. From the DST perspective, what we have recently reminded ourselves of was that in order to bridge the innovation chasm, we actually introduced a policy package of three things. The one was we proposed the IPR Act for publicly financed R&D. That's one of the instruments that we thought would begin to make sure that the public institutions that receive public finance manage intellectual property and assets. So that's one instrument that
we have in Kuru. Now, that public, that act also encourages the setting up of the offices of technology transfer. Now, those offices of technology transfer that we are currently rolling out, and I'll probably ask Christina to remind me where they are and how they are working in the various regions, are meant to help universities and public finance institutions to identify ideas that could be harvested for commercialization. The second policy instrument that we introduced is the National Intellectual Property Management Office, arising out of the Act, as a government entity that would make sure that the advocacy around intellectual property is done, that the right support is provided in order to commercialize through the patent support fund, and the right skills are being developed that will be hosted in the offices of technology transfer and the university. And then the third instrument is TIA. So we don't expect TIA alone to be addressing this problem of the innovation causing. I think it's how well these three instruments work together, because it's not only the funding problem. In fact, we have discovered a third dimension which we should be thinking about, called an engineering gap, in terms of how, when you commercialize these ideas, when you have to then produce a commercial product, you need to be working with institutions that are able to convert small-scale products into large industrial components. So I agree with you, it cannot be done by just one instrument, but also it cannot be done by one agency. It will have to be an ecosystem of entities that work within it. So I think I would, however, anticipate that TIA would play a leading role in sharing with all of us what works and what doesn't work in this domain. So I think that's what the recommendation is saying. For instance, if they try to commercialize ideas, they would start warning people when they come with ideas in 3 or 5 years' time. They say, this works, this doesn't work, these are the reasons. So we'd expect them to take that leadership role. And then if I ask a question around the issue of an enabler and putting emphasis on the return on investment, our original thinking was that the TIA would be an enabler. That's why I think we agree with the recommendations that provide funding. However, find a way in which those that would receive these products when they are supposed to be taken to the next day, you have a conversation and you have a relationship with them after. And also be in the offices of technology transfer and higher education universities so that you get a sense of ideas that are emerging and begin to develop the capability of filtering those ideas and being able to say, this will fly, this may fly, this will definitely not fly. That's the kind of expertise that we thought the organization will build in order to be an enabler, rather than, because if you want to be in this whole innovation chain, you'd need huge resources in order to fund this. We knew that initially we would not be able to have billions of rands that organizations like the IDC had. Would only have, at the moment, it only have a billion rand that the organization receives, and therefore you have to be careful. What is it that you can achieve with a billion rand? However, I think we would expect, and I think one of the recommendations does indicate that in certain instances you may provide soft funding instruments where you can expect a return. Our interpretation is that that return should not be more than a financial return that you'd expect from a bank. It should be a financial return that is consistent with a government that would like to really be an enabler and a developmental agency rather than a funding agency that is really looking at things purely from the commercial perspective. So that's how we've dealt with that. And in fact, we were surprised because when the panel gave the report, that this kind of thinking was actually even a treasury's expectation, that you may have perhaps 5 investments, maybe 3 of them will never see a financial return, and the other 2 are successful, they would be happy with it. So I really think this is an area where we agree with that, but we will be then, of course, with the board working on this. So I think those are the main comments from the chair. Let me see if I can quickly then go through the difficult, let's say the well-crafted question from Honorable Smith. What prompted the review? Of course, you're right. I mean, the things that we've said here. But We are of the opinion that there was a feeling from the community that the agency could do better than what it was doing at the time. And some of these concerns were brought to the ministry and the department. We had our own observations in terms of how the organization's focus was unfolding. However, we always wanted to get from the organization the drivers for the direction that they were taking, informed perhaps by their own learning, because it's one thing to set up an act, it's one thing to say to an organization which is the focus, but maybe they were finding that in the experience of rolling things out, there are things that were not working. For instance, some of the stakeholders from the organization were saying, we're not getting enough ideas from public institutions, and therefore, rather than not spending the money, we should then be sourcing ideas outside the public finance institutions. And therefore, we felt that because there is, everybody seems to have their own views, and maybe for us to also take, if you like, a step back to say, was the original intent the right one? Is the organization, as we saw, fit for the purpose for which it was designed? Or for what we wanted to do in the NFR. And therefore, rather than waiting for 5 years, you have an opportunity to just accept, getting a benchmark, remove yourself from, you know, what you thought it would be in terms of the focus of the organ, and get an independent review to tell you. As I say, we were open about this review. We were anticipating that perhaps they could even come back to the department and say, well, you made a big mistake. There's no need for an agency like this for us to shut it down. So the recommendations, fortunately, hadn't said that. So really, it was driven by observation from the community, our own assessment of how the activities are unfolding, as well as I say, accepting that sometimes the design and actual implementation may not really be aligned because of the experiences of those that are there. So I hope that meets your satisfaction. And then I accept, and we will try our level best around putting the funding for the recommendations if that's available in some of the recording. Okay, Tulani said it's in the report, so we can make that report available to you. Now, my sense is that that high-level comment was on legislative amendment. My sense is that at this point we don't anticipate legislative amendment. All of these recommendations can be accommodated within the Act in its current form, so we don't think so. And then the issue of recommendation, we were also surprised about this recommendation, but this is the issue of finalizing the migration from trust into. Apparently the Minister of Finance has never made a pronouncement on this. It's never, in my view, written back to us. And therefore, if I remember this very well, it was a catch-22. He was willing to condone, but he wanted an investment framework from the organization as a guide for the public, what are the basis for choosing those investments, what happens if those investments don't give a financial return, how would you make, I think that's where, in my recollection, in working between ourselves and here, we probably never finalize that investment framework. So it's a matter that can still be formally closed, and I think we've asked Christina and Tia to really find out where the bottleneck is, but we think it's an issue that can really be resolved. So it's not yet resolved, so you're right, but the possibility of resolving it is not out of our reach. And then the sort of question around why was the relationship at the stage that the panel review made an observation. We try and play our role as accounting and as a department that is responsible for public finance as carefully as we ought to. And in our view, in reading the focus of what the agency was meant to do, we were not sure whether the resources were being used predominantly for the focus. And therefore, we felt that we have to articulate this as honestly as possible. and in the process, because there were different interpretations of the act, which you accept, it's quite broad, and therefore you cannot say the organization was operating outside the mandate. But what we say is that the focus of being funding predominantly ideas from public R&D, we thought there was a shift in this. So if that meant the relationship was not as smooth as it ought to be, we apologized. We thought we needed to articulate that as clearly as and then maybe in the process, because the views are not the same, then we had the tension, and there was no perhaps mediation at the time until we then had to get the recommendations, and we have been interacting now both with the board. We've been invited to the first strategy session to give our own view of how we think it can be resolved. I've been invited to the executive meeting of the executive. We'll be having a bilateral meeting, I think, in October, and we'll be reporting to the minister and the chair of the report on how this is progressing. But the mood, I think, and the relationship already as we begin to go through this recommendation, we feel now we can, if you like, back off, so to speak.
Can I just add a question there? Kind of a follow-up question. That is very interesting, because it has come to my understanding, not for the first time, it's something that has come to my notice a long time ago, when some members of TIA decided to bypass structure and come to me to tell me that things are not going right in TIA. And I told them that the correct channel was that they should go via the structures there. If not, if the structures are not helpful like the board, they must then try and approach the department. I have been told now by some of those structures, as we told you, the CEO has been suspended, is under investigation. Is that true?
I know two things. The one thing is that the CEO took a voluntary leave. I don't think it's a suspension. And then the current board received a allegation through the, I think, in the anti-corruption outline, if I'm not mistaken, on breakdown in governance procedures, as well as a breakdown in the use of internal policies for a range of activities. The current chair of the board brought this to the minister and recommended that a preliminary investigation on the allegations be tested. Those allegations were tested, and the board established after those allegations were tested that there's a need for them to pursue forensic investigation based on the breakdown on the governance, as well as on the following of the processes and procedures in the organization. I do know that the investigation is currently on.
So what is the status? What is now the status of that leave? Is it still leave, or is it now suspension, or what is it?
I think it's still on that voluntary or temporary leave. It's called special leave, I think, until the end of mid-September, I think, or end of September.
Yeah.
Thereabouts.
Chair, what happened is that the CEO actually, in light of the forensic investigation, he offered to the board to step aside so that to enable the investigation to happen in a much more free kind of an environment. So I think it really is the evil to take the situation of the investigation.
Thank you very much. So the issue.
There are problems because, I was about to receive another. I do receive these problems which are operational, unfortunately. I think they rely on my office, that it's a neutral office. So I received another correspondence which I said I would like to see you about, which is in CSIR, about the other executive director, which I did share with you even before. I'm not saying this is very science. I want to know how to deal with them because I'm not a person, I'm a policy maker.
Thank you. Thank you. Honorable Smith, recommendation for the marginal, we've addressed that, but the delinquents project should be discouraged. This is an issue which has two levels. The first issue is just the operationalization of the delinquency. The feeling, I think, from TIA and the stakeholders and public entities is that sometimes the DST would want to do a project and would delinquent a project and ask the entity to do. And there would be no formal processes of engaging the institution on how to execute that project that has been delivered. So this, I think, is what has been discouraged at different levels. The second matter is that in instances where we do feel that we would like an agency in a mode of reference budget to execute something on behalf of the department, we need to make sure that the processes that are being followed are not undermining the institution. And also come up with a process on how those have been handled, because the feeling from the institutions was that sometimes we're constraining them by suggesting that this money must be used for this. So one is the operationalization, the other one is how strategically you agree or do not agree at the highest level on the need to reinforce some of the money. In this case, to be specific, one issue was the issue of reinforcing the biotechnology regional innovation funding. The general feeling from the agency was that we should not do that, we should just give the 500 million thereabout as a transfer without earmarking money for biotech. Now, technically we can't do that because we go to Treasury and ask for money for a specific line item, which is reflected on the E&E as a ring fence. So we have to account for the money, so we can't give it to the agency for the agency to do anything else that they like, because when we have to account both to Treasury and to yourself, by the way, we would have no mechanism and we shouldn't be surprised. The other one, as I say, is the operationalization of that, to say, we shouldn't then allow anybody in the department to just decide, I'm going to ask the agency to do this for me and not have a mechanism of managing that, but also a process of ensuring that the organizations are not being asked any time during the year to be doing things for the department that are not part of the annual performance plan.
So, Chair, but now it's not clear, because from the response, it's clear that there's merit in fencing in certain instances, so the recommendation says it's got to be the fabricant. So how do we deal with the issue of the biotechnology affecting the status quo?
We will find a way of convincing the panel that we accept part of the recommendation. This is just a recommendation. We will reject the other part of the recommendation because we have accounting obligations which we have to adhere to.
In order that you are number one in the
just doing our job in terms of how things work.
I support.
Okay. The radical improvement, I think it, I can't access the stage of how stakeholders were receiving service from the organization, but my sense was that there were no well-defined processes within the organization that said, if you send an application to us, we will respond within a month, if it's successful. If it's not a month, within 2 months with a query that would, I think that's what they were saying. And in certain instances where, you know, there were delays, I suspect the stakeholders are not receiving even maybe updates as to why there are delays. And people have come to me, as I say, I suspect, and indicated the lack of responsiveness from the organization. And I think the recommendation was saying you cannot therefore treat stakeholders if you are a finance institution in that manner, and therefore these issues will have to be radically improved with clear communication as to what the stakeholders that receive service from the organization should expect from the organization. Therefore, the board has been asked to work with the leadership to clearly articulate these processes and communicate them to the stakeholders so that, you know, uncertainty is removed in those that are supposed to receive the service.
Yes, I may. One of the key ones, one of the one of the key points I identified is the drawdown of project funding. Mm. And to me, that's the key signifier of whether there are organizations working on it.
Yeah.
If you're not drawing down funds for your project, then you're basically a bureaucracy doing nothing. So, so the findings will be more detailed on that. Yes.
Okay, shareholders contract, for those things that are outside, quite often sometimes there are opportunities that come after you sign the shareholders contract, because shareholders contract that signed during the annual performance then process when the minute approves for consideration by yourself. We have had one or two instances where institutions do come to the minister on things that are outside the shareholders' contract, but still within the mandate of the organization, that popped in during the course of the year. I know within the agency last time there was an opportunity that they had identified in the European Union on a program called the Open Skies program of the, and they thought that they would benefit by submitting a proposal to solicit funding part of that. That was not part of an ADP, but it's still within the mandate of the TIA, so they would then write to the minister and say, here's an opportunity that has come, would you be comfortable with doing it? So I think that's a very good. And then the fundamental role in the bridges, and I think I've explained that now. The skills that, my own interpretation, I think I'll be really speaking on behalf of the organization here. My sense is that the organization will have a certain base skill set, but they will have to, in my view, draw other skill sets outside the organization, because if you have to have all of these skill sets within the organization, I think you're right. I mean, you'd end up with a lot of costs operational. I do know, for instance, that the Innovation Fund has been able to strike the right balance, where they had identified certain people within the organization to drive certain initiatives, but they had a range of people from outside that they would call in to adjudicate certain proposals if they felt they didn't have those skill sets. I think that can be done. The National Research Foundation does the same in terms of the peer review system. So there, I think, so it's a balance of the base in-house competences vis-a-vis the ones that you then draw from outside. I think the return on investment, the financial return, I think we've already talked on that. Honorable Mchumi, on the moratorium, we don't know how long the moratorium, but we are trying to finalize these recommendations at least early enough this year so that it will inform the annual performance plan of next year. So once the board, because this is a new board, I think it's, in my own view, inundated with too many things that they are really dealing with, these recommendations, this investigation that they are doing. So my sense is that in finalizing the regional strategy, hopefully before end of the financial year, which will be much about a moratorium on regional footprint, that if they have internalized, how this is going to be done. The shareholder compact has got to be also finalized before the financial year, because we have to by then have it as part of signing off of the annual performance plan, the APP. And then bilateral meetings, we have them every quarter with the entities. Every 3 months we meet and agree on issues that we'd like to discuss. So we'll discuss the tech issue with Finland, honorable Roland Kropper. The strengths and the weaknesses. I think it should be better for us to provide you with a report of the findings, because I think the findings, in a sense, you could assume that all of the recommendations are addressing a finding or a weakness, and the strength, I think they were articulated, the strength that the organization has. So in that report, I think we'll be able to share those with you. I don't think you asked the question whether the panel had decided to do anything outside, you know, the scope that they were given. The answer is I don't think so. I do know that one of the recommendations that they are making here is this recommendation of TIA being an organization for government that funds all agencies. So that was a bit of an extension of the review. So that recommendation, I think it's recommendation 9, if I'm not mistaken, is that recommendation that says it should be an all-encompassing. It was a little bit broader than, I think, the original remit, but nevertheless, I think we think it's something that makes sense, that's something that perhaps, and also the forum across government,
and that might actually help the fragmentation of innovation support activities within government. So that's the only one that I can think of. And then technology station, I think we've dealt with that. The core state of the relationship, diplomatically tried to do that, requires a skill set, dealt with that facilitation role. I would explain how they would play that role. And then the last question on entrepreneurship. I think there is no harm in really putting this into the curriculum. I would have loved to have been taught this in my early days, and I would be making a lot of money. But their key focus should also be, of course, on their mandate. And in this case, we are hoping at two levels. One is events, where together with the department, we've identified the need for a program called Technology Matchmaking event, where we bring in financiers and technology people, developing people or commercialization events. But in the curriculum, this is something that perhaps is not necessarily something that can be done by TIA, but they can recommend to us to engage with the bilateral that we have with the Department of Basic Education to see whether this is an idea that can be suggested in the curriculum development. But I think in my personal capacity, as I say, I think it's a good idea. But I don't think the one of the things we say to the agencies is please stick to your core mandate. Let us handle the other things which is within our mandate. So, Chair, I think I've addressed all of that. I apologize. I don't know if Christina wanted to say anything on the OTTs and where they are in this case, if you think that's necessary.
She can summarize because remember we still have another presentation.
Very much at some point. So in essence, I think there are 32, 33 institutions in terms of the IPRS that fall in the remit. Of those,
just for the microphone, that's you.
I think it's fair to say that most of the institutions either have an OTT or have an OTT function. So that function, for instance, if you look at KwaZulu-Natal and you look at the Eastern Cape, there's a shared OTT function between a number of universities that are in the area.
I learned about this OTT myself. It was a strange terminology. How is it organized?
So OTT, well, in the community, the community mostly refers to as TTO, Technology Transfer Office. But the Act speaks to it as an Office of Technology Transfer.
Okay.
So they're practically the same thing. And the office then will look at the office from the University or Science Council and look at the need to protect. They'll look at the identifier, they'll look at the need to protect, and they'll look at the need to commercialize it. And that hopefully they'll do in collaboration with TIA as well as other agencies and partners. So of the 32 club organizations, I think it's safe to say around about 2/3 of the organizations receive some form of funding through the NICMA, through the National IT Management Office. And that form of funding is out of support, direct support to OTT, and they also then also receive funding through the IT Fund, which provides a measure of support in terms of patenting requirements. So in terms of funds that they will spend, they get about 50% co-funding through the NICMA. I think that gives you a very short overview.
Are they regionally based?
No, they're predominantly institutionally based. So each university or group of universities will have an OTT, and the majority of science councils also have an OTT. They may not formalize it into an actual office, but they'll have a person or a group of people that are used as a function per se.
Is that how many are there?
32, I recall correctly. So it's the eight science councils and 20 universities.
I
hope that academic things go well. I think they serve an enormous purpose, and we certainly, from an artist perspective, we are seeing some small but certainly significant improvements in both in terms of patenting rates as well as patenting products in sexual health.
I think that last bit of the answer responds to what I could ask. We could have, we'd be ready to the committee have some presentation on the functioning of OCT. Mm-hmm. I think it's meant to be a key link in the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that link is working, then maybe the outcome down the road. We really have to choose one that's working well
mm-hmm.
and show it to us why it's working, what's happening there, mm-hmm. not happening one that they're not doing well. We could have them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. It's my first time to hear about this OCT today. I read about it in the document and I didn't understand how to write. Anyway, thank you very much. I think, honourable members, I will take a 5-minute break so that I should research up the things for the other presentation. And we can have some 5-minute break. And then it's not a very long one, this one, I'm sure. We'll be able to manage it. Fortunately, my meeting has been changed from about 12 to 2 o'clock, which is following after this. So I was calling the tuna.
So I need a visit back to the OGT.
Probably
would be better than the one around the region here, which is working well, and then the presentation follows after that.
You must learn the channels then. Okay, thank you very much for an informative presentation. Let's hope that the following one will also not make us quarrel.
How should we be?
sure that we know how to look at what makes sure that we
what I said, you know what I said, they're fine, right? In the interest of time, I think we can resume. I think 5 minutes is long overdue.
Any conditioning
this room? Right. Okay. No, I'm not blaming anybody. I'm simply saying that let us reconvene. This coming session it shouldn't be the longest. It should be the shortest session I've ever had. No, that's not our goal. There are processes. This is always a two-stage process. The first process is the briefing. And we then go and look into the briefing and then reconsider ourselves. Then we come then to...
Oh, we come back.
To come back, yes. It's a two-stage process. That's always.
The second... On the
yeah. But you see, we don't have the quorum even ourselves. You see. There's nothing we can do. Okay, without waste of time, teaching. I don't know who is in application leading us, and that's whoever is leading us, it does.
We are in the process of reviewing the comments, so COO says he's going to be 5 minutes
watching. People shouldn't take for granted because we have been recommended by the president and think that the committee is now actually timid. The committee is not timid, it is still having quick. Very sharp.
Yeah, thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'll just go through this presentation, which is very short, but I think just trying to cover all the issues relating to the reconstitution of the Executive Board.
Let me just first before you continue, let me just outline what is supposed to be expected and what's supposed to be done, because I've had a number of these questions ever since this first day. Let the discussion must find and decide everything at once. It doesn't happen like that. Whenever this process happens, it's usually at a two-stage theory level. It is defined by the department which you have to digest. And we have to stay up. There may be reasons which may involve that we involve our parliamentary law advisors to advise us. Should we say that this is the needs arise? And so usually to give it a pure two process, we give it a two-stage process. It's the briefing from the department, we ask a few clarifications, whatever we need to. And then we go and then sit down with what we have been clarified about, because reading the CVs alone does not help, because you do not know who is what, where, why. The CVs simply talk about people's achievements. They don't talk about other considerations. And you get some clarifications about what our mandate is here once you have had some briefing. And it is upon that, and when we come back, we come back knowing that we are now discussing as a close thing, as a committee, to decide what we recommend to the minister, you see. And we have to agree. Okay, thank you. Then we can continue. I just needed that members should be aware of that process.
Thank you, Chair. I think you spot on that, Chairperson, in relation to that. So this is the first thing, maybe, in relation to the constitution of the health, but sort of how the HSR
program.
So this is the decision that will focus on the term of the board, and the term of office of the board, the composition of the board, and the legislative process that we are required to follow in the reconstitution process, the progress to date, and the shortlisted candidates which we are presenting for the committee for consideration, and then conclude. Just as a work background, the current board was appointed for a period of 4 years, and the term is expiring at the end of next month, which is the 31st of October. So therefore, the new board needs to be appointed with effect from the 1st of November 2013, and will run its four-year term up until 2017.
For those that are scared about time, we have enough time, because Parliament is going to reconvene, I think, after I think 28th of October. And from there we'll have some sittings, and so we can process it. We'll have enough time to process and finish off this thing before it's due time.
We would be very grateful, Chair, if that could happen, to ensure that at least we are able also to submit to Cabinet for approval once the Parliament is approved.
So we have enough time, because the coming sessions will necessarily predominantly be the committee weeks, where we can schedule, where we have the whole day to look at committee programs.
Thank you very much, Chair. In the light of that, therefore, the Minister initiated the process of the reconstitution of the board, in line with prescription or the clauses that are relevant in the legislation. Just as a way of background, the composition of the board as outlined in Section 5.2 of the HSR Act is the board will comprise the chair, not less than six or more than nine members, and the CEO, who is the head official of the board. So in total, the board, or the full board, should actually have 10 members and the CEO. We always try this in all in the extent.
No, that means minimum 8, maximum 11.
Minimum 7.
No, I'm saying the total.
Yes.
Including the CEO.
8,
yes. It's 8 11, and the,
yes.
That's quite sure. I
so try to make the arithmetic plus. Well, in that sense, we always try and go for the full or the maximum number, to ensure that the board functions properly, particularly because there are a number of committees that the board members need to chair. So therefore, I think the distribution of responsibilities become easier if we've gone for a maximum. The legislative process, or sort of the legislation, also outlines the process that needs to be followed by the minister in the reconstitution process. which is a publication in the Capital Congress and traditional newspapers, calling for nominations, the appointment of the panel of experts to compile a list of not more than 20, in which obviously we need to present to the committee for approval, and that the short list must be compiled after a transparent and competent process, and that the National Assembly is to approve shortlisted candidates, and therefore the minister will then appoint this maximum number to first to chair from the list of the approved, from the shortlist that has been approved by the National Assembly. Section 5.4 of the Act of Ireland also stipulates that the board members must be appointed in terms of their knowledge, special qualifications, their experience in human sciences, or skills in relation to some of the aspects of the functions of the CASAS. Citizens of South Africa and those with right of permanent residence, they also are eligible for appointment in the board. And the emphasis on the issue of the board members who at least one must have financial expertise. I think in 2008 when we reviewed the legislation also there was an emphasis on one member of the board must be a distinguished representative of social science research community in the rest of the continent. So I think we have tried to, in 2009 the constitution complied with that particular clause. Also section 5.10 of the Act also specifies that members of the board should hold office for a period of not exceeding 4 years, but they may be reappointed, and in this case we have members who are eligible for reappointment, and that there's no member who must serve more than 2 consecutive terms. Again, in the current board there were 2 members who had already served 2 consecutive terms, therefore they are not eligible, and hence we did not include them in the shortlist. If all members expire at the same time, the minister may tell the 2 terms, the terms of 2 members or for 1 or more terms to ensure continuity. But I think in the case we not impacted by that particular thought. Progress update, the minister informed the board in terms of the expiry of their term, and requested members to indicate availability. At the time, 8 members indicated that they were available for reappointment, but subsequent to that, we learned this morning that one of the members actually indicated that she's no longer available, but she was included in shortlist, which is Professor Amanda Lawrence, because I think she's been appointed in another board, so therefore she feels that she will not do justice to herself in this particular board. So therefore, from the current board, we only have 7 members who are eligible for reappointment. We published an advert in the national newspapers, which with the Sunday Times, the Press Mail, Guardian, and Report, and the Government Gazette. Within the Act requires us to publish in 2 national newspapers, the time record for 4, and I think we took Honorable Lawrence's advice last time that we should also diversify the kind of media that we advertise in, so hence we consider support. We also appointed, the minister also appointed the panel of experts to compile short lists of candidates which we are presenting today. The panel was chaired by the Director General. In the panel also the Minister appointed the DG of Social Development. In the panel, the PDG of Social Economic Partnerships in the Department, the CEO of the Department, the Professor Rosende from the CEO of ASAF, Professor Figlema Zibuko, the Vice Chancellor of the University of Zululand, my apologies to the University of Zululand, and Dr. Malabo Cavella, the Vice Principal of UNISA. So those are the members of the panel that compiled shortlist, which we are now presenting for consideration to the committee. Just to indicate that we received 49 public nominations and 8 members from the current board, which are now obviously been reduced to 7 as spent this morning's advice, who are available, and that their names are highlighted in red so that we can distinguish the current board members from the new names that we have presenting. So therefore, we are now sitting with a short list of 19 candidates, which we are presenting, even though we have compiled 20 names, which we present to the committee. And the only criteria we used, we looked at the expertise of the individuals, race, gender, disability, and reappointment for continuity. The issue of disability was very sharply by the panel. Even though in the public nomination that we received, there was no one met that particular criteria. We then looked into, particularly in the social science field, people who could fit the criteria of self and God. The two that we approached were unfortunately not available due to commitment that they have, but I think we thought the criteria should be outlined as part of the considerations in future board appointments, and I think we need to be specific, but also in approaching an organization that could actually help us in that regard. Chair and honourable members, this is a list of shortlisted candidates, the first one being Professor Pillay, Tariq Pillay, who is currently serving on the board, HSRC, Dr. Bakari Klemmer, who is currently in the board, Professor Paulo Zulu, he is also in the current board.
When I read this, I found out you said F.
Categorized them, obviously, in terms of their expertise. So I think those who have expertise in the education field is Dr. Bukhari Dema, Professor Sasulu, Professor Molesane, Professor Msila.
What I'm interested in is, who are the current members of the board here?
Those that are in red.
Yeah.
In red.
I'm reading from the...
The presentation you have highlighted all those who have expertise in the category of social science, Professor Palinge, who's currently in the board, we've got four new names, which is Professor Ismail Abidis, Dr. Dube, Professor Valendulo, Professor Hazim, and then the two who are currently in the board, which is Dr. Nesuere and Professor Olokoshi, who meets that particular category of social scientists in the continent. And then Professor Lawrence, the one that I indicated that she subsequently withdrawn, because I think we had thought that she should be kept in the board because of the expertise in statistics, which I think is very critical to have in the board, particularly the kind of research that HSRC deals with, so lectures, so somewhere in that regard. And then on finance, we've got currently Professor Uliana. We have now had Mr. Erwan Nichols in the particular category. And then we have Professor Van Lerkert, who's got expertise in political studies. And then in terms of the field of law, the advocate Della. And then in the health area, we've got Dr. Madela. And the social science, Ms.
Mandela or Madela?
Madela.
Not that you've made a mistake.
And in the field of natural sciences, we have Ms. Butcher. And then I think Dr. Brusin speaks well in the commerce or finance area. So those are the members that we are proposing to the committee to consider the shortlist of. In this instance now, it's going to be 19 names instead of 20. And if those names are put, then the minister will have to consider. And I must indicate, Chair, that in this case, the legislation says in consultation. It's not after consultation.
Yeah. In consultation, which means that unlike in consultation, after consultation.
So the appointment of the process of the new board is in line with the process of the Act. So we recommend the committee to consider the name and obviously at an appropriate time approve the shortlist. Thank you.
Let me give you the history of this Act, probably, if you don't mind. This act stayed for 2 years in the presidency because there was a problem about the consultation with. It was supposed there was a big recommendation from the department that it should be after consultation, just like others. Now, as the community fellows now, we needed to stick to with consultation so that we amend what we are supposed to do. Because actually it was triggered by 1 minute, I'll not say who. Who actually, when the committee made the recommendations there, of two names that were not supposed to be in the board, and that minister simply neglected the committee and went ahead with all the names that he had brought to Parliament. And so then when we questioned that, we were told that it is because the minister has power to do what he likes, because the act is after consultation, but he can do what he does after consultation. And so the committee became very, very strong that in future we will not pass an act which we have toothless. And so that's why we did talk to this one. And that was in 2006, if not 5. And so it stayed a long time. For 2 years there was a problem until it was passed. It came twice to Parliament, but all committees stood firm that it should be in consultation with. Actually now Parliament is saying that it's going to streamline all the sectors that they are uniform, the appointment of boards. You are uniform, there are no different types of acts governing the same appointment of boards. So that's what I'm doing. So this is very straight, it's very straightforward, but it's just that the committee must make up its mind correctly because it's in consultation with. What you say is what you mean. Yes.
Thanks, Chair. And you don't agree with this in consultation with the act doesn't mention those words at all. Mm-hmm. What you're saying is the process involves both of us. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean in consultation the appointment of the board. We simply approve a shortage. So the appointment of the board members is the executive's decision alone, no in the consultation. Except to the extent that we submit his name that they are providing us. But anyway. Chair, it's going to be quite clear from my understanding of the process, because in fact the presentation on page 5 is a little bit ambiguous, and I don't actually agree with the word. What is implied by the presentation now is there's a shortlist of 20, that shortlist of 20 gets approved, and then it goes to the minister. But it's something to say that that shortlist of 20 has to be approved. What it says is an approved shortlist goes back to the ministry. And we could kick out our name.
Yeah.
Give you the list of 6.
Yeah.
And the minister's forced to appoint all 6 if we wanted to. All can appoint all of them.
Yeah.
So it's not the same list necessarily that comes to us as the one that goes back, although that's what you're implying in your text. It doesn't matter. But having read the disclaimer, Chair, I'm quite happy with it anyway. So I don't see any particular reason why we should delay. From my point of view anyway, I'm quite happy to say now, I would like the entire list as it stands, minus the one, could be approved and go back to the minister as is. And we don't need to even go through this in detail later. That would be my position.
I will... Mature. It's my birthday, you must remember I forget. I have to forget, I'm thinking about my cake.
I am the fact that days go with
liberty.
Bad days are bad days.
For that day you are it's just a comment. The COO indicated that an issue of disability was raised heavily in the panel, and I believe those who submitted their CVs did not meet the requirements. Can I break the rest of this?
In the names of the public names that were seen through the public nomination process, there was not a single individual who had disability. But the panel recommended that we look into the landscape in the field of social science and see whether we could identify individuals who would fit that particular category. when we did that by approaching individuals outside of these 49, because we felt that the public nomination did not, you know, give us those individuals. So therefore, individuals were approached, actually, they were not available to serve on the board. So we did not want to delay the process by opening up the process for nomination and be specific in that category. So moving forward, we need to ensure that we actually clear the nominations from various institutions that could help us with that particular, those particular nominations.
About what you said, in the data that I remember when I first came to the committee 2 years ago, there was an appointment, I believe, if my name was Sesmiola, it was the SANSA board, which then the department indicated that they couldn't get a person. Then I committed that I was ensure that I provide the person. They gave me to submit. I remember it was on Thursday, but before Thursday they had was the name. So I'm assuming that in future we have status of disabled people for the National Disability Sector. So please approach us for us to assist the department and their various institutions and entities. For instance, when it comes to the legal, if I can share with you, the disability sector is, maybe it has been can occur to this as well, that the disability sector is overpopulated to legal people. Go to the disability people, so they'll get a lot of legal, people with a legal background.
But how can that help too? Mm-hmm. Is that the honorable member who is speaking now is the national chair of the disabled people. If you had top player now, you would have got more than what you want. Unfortunately, I think that's where the error happened. It was an error of communication. But he is a national, he is a newly appointed national head here in South Africa. So he has already pulled that to me. Thank you very much. Right, I saw your hand
on the thank you. I would like to just comment on this document. I struggled through it. It's a sloppy compiled document. That would be nasty. I really struggled. If you put this kind of document before a judge in a court, you won't be prepared to listen to the case. Some of the curriculum vitae read from the back to the front. I found some of Professor Lauren, because she's not family. part of the CV was part of Professor Dr. Kwalinge. Whoever compiled this document, it was a bad job.
Didn't you have this document? Because I've got a very nice one.
I got that one. But I'm interested in TikTok.
Oh, okay. That's an option then.
Okay, but still, it's not acceptable. Coming from the best performing. And I'm really proud of it. I boasted about this. Even at home, I told my searching, I said, our department is the best performing department. I'm boasting about this department. But it's not acceptable. Then I have just a few nice to know answer questions. I don't know whether I can ask them and or whether it's
information.
But okay, let's start with page 5. I'm particularly interested in our process of the approval of the shortlist. Is it that simple? And then also, just the third last, the shortlist must be compiled after a transparent and competitive process. What does this process entail? Transparent and competitive. Then page 6, is there a checklist, a practice to check all these functions that the members have to do compared to the curriculum vitae or the applications? Do they really check? Do they comply with all these functions? And, okay, the other one was answered already. Page 7. No member may serve more than two consecutive terms. I know it also applies to, for instance, the president, but why not? We do have a very competitive or competent member. Why not? We know the Act does provide for it, but why being part of it? I know you said it in the Act.
But I think it's an Act.
But it's just nice to know why it is. Then,
we are the parliamentarians. You can't ask them. We are the parliament to pass the Act. You must ask for us.
Okay, then I'll ask because you should have been part of it. I was part of it. I only joined the committee 2 years ago. Panel of experts here. What is a panel of experts to compile a shortlist? Now, how are these members selected? You call them experts. Then also on page 10, for instance, we have the following criteria: expertise. Again, is it a checklist? Race, the only one colored person of the 20. Then gender, we now have a balance of 12 male, 7 females. The disability was raised by my colleague Honorable Chumi, and the reappointment for continuity. Now we know that Professor Lawrence is not available anymore. I would like to know, what are we going to do about the fact that we don't now have? Are we putting this addition because as far as it was possible for me, and what about them? A statistician, is that the correct pronunciation? Yes, we need, are you going to re-advertise or? Yeah, thank you.
Before I answer you, in terms of this document which you are complaining about, this came actually from the committee here. It was mandated by the committee that whenever they bring this list in Parliament, they shouldn't just bring this summarize this, which do not show us exactly what are the detailed CVs of people that have been shortlisted from a very big list. Actually, there was even a problem that members wanted to see all the CVs and be able to verify for themselves how those that were shortlisted from 49 to 20, how they were shortlisted, what were their CVs, what were considerations were there. So the time when the committee were still very active during the mushrooming of democracy, when people were very active to read overnight and sleepless night reading, they wanted more literary books like this of the CVs to study them over 2 weeks, studying all the CVs. And at the end, we were exhausted. We felt like, no, they must only bring the full service of the shortlisted candidate. So it was Parliament that directed departments to do what they are doing. So we can't blame them now for bringing a big list of it. I tried to read this myself. People are too learned. Yeah, you end up getting exhausted by reading one individual as if you're reading the whole book.
I don't have a problem with the list, but the way it was compiled, it's sloppy.
No, but they have just put together different CVs
and
they come.
What I see is that some read from the back to the front, some are mixed. If it's alone, the CV is part of another person's CV, that's what I mean.
Oh, okay. That's a different count. All right.
I didn't put the formal proposal, but I was intimating that. Is there any particular reason we can't simply adopt it now? Why would we come back in a week's time to do it?
There was a proposal from Honourable Member Smith that why don't we do that? But before we do that, let them respond to what Honourable Member has just asked. Yeah. She wants some clarification. Yeah.
Honourable Chair. Just to speak to some of the questions. On the issue of transparency and competitive, I think what we mean is that the process of calling for nominations needs to be very transparent. That is why we publicize this in the legislative papers. We don't do, and the secretaries will not go out and headhunt and look for individuals ourselves. So really, that isn't the case. Obviously, we've highlighted that we did that as far as the issue of disability concerned, because we felt that the committee had raised this issue before, so therefore we wanted to fulfill that particular issue, particularly because it was part of the criteria that we set for ourselves in doing so. But under the master consensus, we want to ensure that we only consider those names that were received through that particular process. On the competitiveness part, you also look at the kind of expertise that each individual will bring into the board. For example, you might find that there are two individuals with financial expertise, but you look at the kind of experience that the other has and to the other. That's why I think when the panel sits, you know, the board becomes very clean and yellow, you know, trying to separate each individual in terms of their strengths and their weaknesses. So we look into that. So that's what is really the process means. In terms of, I think you raised the issue around the process of to check functions. We also look at what exactly, you know, do we need in this particular board. So that is why the categories in relation to the expertise, so that with these functions for it to be fulfilled, you need somebody with the legal expertise, you need somebody who will be able to chair the committee of the board, you know, and all those things. So you need somebody who will chair the other committee. So you look at different aspects again to say who will play a particular function. So we do that process ahead of time. But the board does not have appointed board members but cannot function, because none of them possess a particular expertise to ensure good corporate governance in their particular entity. On the issue of no members myself, I think the chair has raised, but I think these are also in terms of good corporate governance, really, that you have people serving no more than, you know, two terms, basically, you know, and it's more about, you know, again, I'm trying to ensure that we promote good governance. On the issue of the panel members who were selected, I think the question was, you know, we looked at various fields. For example, the DG of the Department of Defense in terms of the governance issues that, you know, that led to the entities and the role that the mandate that they need to perform. On the issue of the renewable energy and social development, we do feel that a number of studies, I think, that sometimes are performed by the HRC itself, you know, that goes to the portfolio and of the department that he manages. Mr. Patel is the CDG responsible for the oversight of the HRC. Each CDG has a responsibility to provide oversight on the partner entity. So HRC is a task for under his portfolio. The CEO, obviously, is the custodian of governance within the organization. So, and Professor, ASAP is one of those entities that has a lot of studies in the system. So therefore, we felt that, again, the kind of leadership that Professor Diab will be able to provide in terms of the quality of our members would be critical. Professor Mazibogo, I think, again, there's a lot of interface with higher education. So we felt that also she's got an expertise in the area of social science. Dr. Mulabu Kobela was also selected, he was obvious previously.
You can add that she is also the director of the Masam Sululand. That's the one.
Yes, this is the director. And Dr. Kobela is also the microbiologist, but the vice principal of UNISA. We felt that he's got the kind of expertise being a former public servant, now being in academia, so it was, I think. So it was a set of individuals that we thought, you know, would be able to assist us in, by looking at us, not only from the, you know, the coming point of view, but I think also looking at from the outside.
Dr. Kvela was also in the Department of Health.
This was an issue relating to the criteria. I've tried to explain, really, we tried to create a very broad criteria. It's become very difficult in the transparent processes, particularly when it comes to issues of race and gender, because you also do not want to satisfy a particular criteria while compromising, you know, the functionality of the board, to say that by any means necessary, you know, you have to have X number of men or X number of women. We try and balance that, but I think we look at what we have in the pool, you know, and I think we also, we tried the last time, I think it was with the Santa board, where we couldn't find suitable individuals. Then we went the route of headhunting, which the speaker actually sent the issue back, I think, to the committee, because that was an incorrect process, because there's no provision in the legislation that we must go and headhunt. So therefore, we worked within the pool that has been provided or has been actually received through the nomination process, the party transparent nomination process. So therefore, we do not want to compromise ourselves too much, really, by getting into processes that are not legislated, but, you know, in a way, they could be good practice, but I don't think that we should follow things that are not in the legislation. Thank you.
Right, there's been a proposal from one honorable member Smith. If we can finalize this today, is there anybody with any reservations in our channel with me?
Just a last question about the loss of Professor Amanda Lund in the institute in statistics. How are you going to deal with that? Do you have somebody else there?
Well, thanks, Chef. I think most instances it's always good to have people with, you know, certain expertise in the board, but you also appreciate the fact that the board can might not have all the kind of skills, you know, that we have. But in this instance, where I think the board requires that kind of an expertise, it always can always be brought from outside. So we do believe that we would probably not re-advertise and say we're calling for somebody with specific skills. But we always appreciate the fact that when we have the nomination, we take advantage of what we find in the nomination process. So I don't think that this will hamper the functioning of the board. But as I said, in instances where they require, but even some of the individuals that are currently, they do have some kind of technical background, but I think not being sort of the specialization area, you know, that they are focusing on. But I think we do believe that in this area, in the expertise, they'll definitely buy the expertise. But also I think with the executive of the HSRC, you do find those skills. So it is not the kind of situation of losing everything if you lose Professor Ireland.
Actually, the act does not specify as area of specialization. It simply says diversify in area of specialization so that it enhances the capacity of the general public and environment. There may be a mathematician, but not necessarily that the mathematician has got to be there. If a mathematician is unavailable, that you must go around looking for a mathematician to replace the mathematician. It's not exactly that. The item is to try and diversify in the area of expertise so that the capacity of this board is as satisfied as possible. Right. Now, then we come back to the proposal by Honorable Smith. Any seconder of Honorable Smith's proposal that we finalize the next event today, the other bank for the same purpose? Honorable Machuma?
Thanks for
the second.
I do
second
Honorable
Smith's proposal
that we
finalized
today.
Any seconder of the... sorry. I want the second, I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Right, having agreed on the finalization of the nominated list of names, I'll read to you to the report of the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology, which we must adopt. Sent to adoption by the National Assembly. The report of the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology on the consideration of a short list of candidates for appointment to the board of the Human Science and Research Council, HSRC, dated 18 September 2013. The Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology, having considered the short list of candidates to the appointment to the board of the HSRC in terms of section 5(3)(c) of the Human Science Research Council Act 2008, Act Number 17 of 2008, read to it, CAGC dated 9 September 2013, recommends that the House approve the following shortlist. Proposal by Honorable Smith. Honorable Lyne. Seconded by Honorable Lyne. Thank you very much, Honorable. Let's conclude and let me thank the honorable members who have joined us to facilitate this process. Thank you very much. We hope you are very bold for the start. We do need you extra time. I know yourself, there are some food there and everything. Yeah, don't live hungry. Unfortunately, the cake is very limited.
Don't leave the cake.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you very much, Brother Titi and our fellow team. That was very good. I think we've done a lot of good work today. We hope to see you. But I will have one or two words just before you leave here. I've got the cake. Everybody is welcome to have a piece of the cake here. Everybody, including the delegation from the teaching
club. Not committee clubs from other committees.
My apologies.